Well, it is great to be here, back here after 2 weeks. Actually, some of you know, but I was here 2 weeks ago for the Trinity Camp, and before that, when I was first invited, and you guys are trying to figure out whether I came here, who invited me first, Trinity or man, I can't remember, but when I found out the venue, I was like, oh my goodness, I was here about 49 years ago. So this used to be an E-Free camp, and my dad was an E-Free pastor in Pullman. And so somewhere in the mid-70s, my dad and mom drove me to Black Lake Bible Camp. And I was just, mid-teens somewhere. Wanted to tell a little story. This is something that's not confidential. My mom and dad told it in some relationships, you know, how to keep short accounts with each other. Relationships, husbands, wives. And I found this story. I've heard this story after I'd been to Black Lake as a kid. They told the story about how mom and dad had gotten out of fellowship with each other. They had dropped me and my friend off at Black Lake Bible Camp. And they were on their way home, and dad got lost on his way back to I-90. And my mom made some snide remark about his navigational skills. And you don't do that to a Navy navigator. And it was icy cold for a while in the car, and they were really no communication for a while. But they finally got back into fellowship and back on I-90 and back to Moscow. But they told that story about how to, you know, confess your sins and get right with each other. So the moral of that story is, after Black Lake Bible Camp, make sure that you stay in fellowship with each other on the way home. And thank God for Google Maps. So anyway, this camp, the theme of the camp is, I wore this shirt, this cool shirt, just in case I forget what the theme is, I can just, oh yes, that's what I'm supposed to be talking about, the Christian and creation. And there's two facets that I wanted to address. One is our responsibility to the creation that God has made, which is my first talk, Different Shade of Green. What's our responsibility? And the second is how God made the creation, that he made the creation, so that puts you in conflict with the theory of evolution. So those are my two areas, my wheelhouse is Christian dominion as well as the creation-evolution controversy. That God made it, and how he made it, when he made it, that sort of thing. All right, let me wake up my computer here. There we go. Oh, man. It went in hibernation. Okay, there we go. So, Different Shade of Green. And presenter view. There we go. Wonderful. We're on track. Okay, so this is named after the title of my book, and this is sort of a summary of my book, but you get a lot more in the book, so don't think, oh, I heard the talk, I don't have to get the book. What I want to talk about is, what does biblical dominion look like? Okay, what does biblical dominion look like? Now, you notice I didn't use the word stewardship, okay? And I'll talk about that in a little bit. This is a hot button issue, and one of the reasons or the impetus for writing was I saw Christians sort of not knowing what to do with it. The topic. many of them would just, anything environmental, they'd just have a knee-jerk reaction, gut reaction, like, I don't want to have anything to do with that. Because that's the realm of the environmentalist. And they sort of had a reactionary attitude towards the creation, and they would throw the baby out with the bathwater. And then there was the other side, and I'm sure there was a continuum between the two extremes, but the other extreme was, oh, it's cool to be green, is the Christian, you know. And then appealing to the Christians that really like the outdoors, hipster, you know, people that like to backpack and eat organic dirt cookies. And they were just, and then they would imbibe the secular, progressive, liberal, environmental agenda and then sprinkle Christianity on it. And that was just, that won't do. So you had the reactionaries against anything environmental, throw the baby out with the bathwater, and then the other extreme would be to accept all baby and all bathwater. And it was, we needed to have a biblical, just a thoroughgoing biblical view of the environment. So that's the impetus behind it. So one of the things I wanted to first ask is, why are many Christians apathetic about the environmental issues? And that was one of them. Throw the baby out with the bathwater. They don't want anything to do with the earth-worshipping, Gaia-worshipping environmentalists. Another reason is that they have little exposure to the beauty and wonders of creation. I think that's not very true in the Northwest. Most Christians, we live in a beautiful part of the country. We love the outdoors. We go enjoy them. But there are some people, less fortunate souls, that are in, you know, flat states, and everything is corn, 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 and more corn. And they occasionally see a robin or a squirrel, and that's about it. And so they just are not exposed to the beauties and wonders of creation as much. And lastly, they don't get much good Bible teaching on it, because many conservative Christian churches are loath to have a sermon on it for reasons that I said. It's like, immediately the congregation was like, what? Our pastor's gone liberal. As soon as they hear any kind of sermon on it. And that's why I'd like to call it creation rather than environment. Notice, if I say environment, we just immediately have a guard up. If I say creation, oh, that's cool. It's the same thing. Creation and the environment is the same thing. So those are some of the reasons. I'm sure there are more, but we got a lot of apathy. And hopefully I can resolve that. The first part of my talk is like reasons for wise dominion from a scriptural standpoint, that just very clear in scripture. And then the other part would be reasons for wise dominion that we have discovered through our own scientific investigation in the last several hundred years. Because God said in Proverbs, it says, it's the glory of God to conceal a matter. It's the glory of kings to search out a matter. God didn't give us all the answers. And he gave us a brain. He gave us curiosity. He gave us logic. And he gave us observational skills. And we can discover things that aren't clearly laid out in scripture. So I'm going to rattle through the biblical reasons, and then we'll go on to more other reasons that we've discovered. And then we'll look at problems, environmental problems, and we'll look at solutions. When do we officially over?
At 10.
10, okay.
You'll leave a few minutes for questions.
I will do my best. Okay. First reason is God's self-evaluation. This is super important. Because in our overarching view of why we exercise wise dominion, we want to look at what God thinks about it. And in Genesis 1:31, it says, God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. The reason I think this is very key is because It's not dependent on our evaluation. It's dependent on God's. He said it was very good. End of argument. And this also says that the various plants and animals that God made do not have to earn the right to exist by being practical to us. Okay, we all know that there's certain animals that commend themselves to us well. Cows, cattle, sheep, goats, chickens, pigs. And you can list all of the agricultural animals, as well as pets, like dogs and cats and stuff, for companionship and comfort and those sorts of things. If they aren't on that narrow list of practical creatures or plants, like crops, let's go through the crops, wheat, rice, barley, corn, the things that feed us. And the list can go pretty big if you look at the global menu. But if you look at the total, it's a tiny, if you look at the total of all creatures God made, it's a tiny fraction that are practical to us. Very tiny. It's less than 1%. So why did God make all this other stuff? Well, some of us say, well, because it's practical some way, we just have to figure it out. Well, maybe, but I think there's a lot of stuff that's just not practical. I have t-shirts with all sorts of animals on it that aren't practical. Salamanders, frogs. There's no good cuts of meat on a salamander. You can't make leather out of salamander. There's nothing practical about salamanders. Okay, but they're glorious. Why? Because God made it. Second, and this shouldn't be a surprise to you, but it's our life support system. Nature is not just this nice, showy stage that God put us on. It is our life support. Okay? We sometimes just think, oh, it's nice and green and pretty, but everything that we eat is from biological life. We don't eat rocks, okay? We eat plants, we eat animals, and all animals that we eat plants. Everything is just life-related, and we couldn't live without it. But we, in our modern society, we're sort of disconnected from the land. We think our meat comes shrink-wrapped, you know, at the grocery store. We're less connected. The more connected we are with the land, the more we realize, wow, God has really provided for us. We can thank God for farmers. We can thank God for ranchers. We can thank God for all of that. But ultimately, He was the one that gave all these gifts. Food, clothing, leather, wool, cotton, linen. All of these things are from plant material. Thank God for photosynthesis, because that's where all of the cotton and linen comes from, photosynthesis. Building materials, wood, photosynthesis. All of that used to be thin air. And if you want to know why it's all thin air, get my biology textbook. All of the plant material came from CO2 and water, and nitrogen from the air ultimately, and so it's all in the air. Very little, less than 1% is from the soil. Less than 1% of the material to build a tree or a plant is from the soil. I mean, it came through the soil, like water, but most of the biomass of the plant came from thin air. That's magic. Photosynthetic magic. Sacrifices in Leviticus and other places in the Old Testament, you see sacrifices were plant and animal. All the pharmaceuticals, plant and animal. Okay? Mostly plants. Most of our pharmaceuticals are plant-derived. God had all of this in mind. It's not like we're so clever and God just made stuff and we just happened to figure out how to use it. God had all of this in mind for our life support system. Three, God commanded us to care for it. This is called the Dominion Mandate, and theologians call it the Dominion Mandate. God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. Two parts to the Dominion Mandate. One, be fruitful and multiply. That's the easy part. We seem to do that very naturally. The harder part is to have dominion over the fish of the sea. This part of the Dominion Mandate, if you look at it, just we usually think dominion is space exploration and building cathedrals and stuff. But when we look at the text, it's actually global wildlife management. It's global wildlife management as well as domestic life management. Now, you say, why don't we, most Christians today use soft, nice words like stewardship, right? You hear about, oh yeah, Christians are into, you know, stewardship. It's not in the Bible. Okay? It's dominion. We just kind of distance ourselves from that word dominion because it's harsh. It sounds like dominate and all of that. But the reason, the difference between, I don't climb down somebody's throat if they say stewardship. I've used it too just to communicate because they don't understand what I'm saying if I say dominion. But stewardship does not imply ownership. Dominion does. So, and it says in Psalm 115, the heavens are the Lord's heavens, but earth he gave to men, to mankind. So he signed the title over to us. We own it. Now, he ultimately owns it. We know that God ultimately owns it, but we are not stewards. Okay? Say that again. We're not stewards. We are subordinate owners. We can exercise dominion badly, or we can exercise it well. Okay, so unpacking dominion. That word, rada, in Hebrew is a strong word. It's the power or right of governing and controlling. It's sovereign authority. God told man to fill, subdue, and rule over the earth and life. We have been given dominion over the creation to care for it, enhance it under the lordship of Jesus Christ. That's what true dominion is. I want to redeem the word and not think, oh, it's an ugly, exploitive word. When we exercise this dominion, it's important to have knowledge and appreciation of our fellow creatures. If you have a pet, or you're a rancher, or even if you're wildlife management, game, you know, you need to know the creatures that are under your care. You need to know their habitat requirements. You need to know their food. You need to know what they need as far as reproduction. We need to know their nutrition. We need to know them. We can't exercise dominion without knowing them. And if you just know them but you don't appreciate them, then it's drudgery. You know, when you have a kid that's begging for a pet and get the pet, that eventually the novelty wears off and now it's just no more appreciation, then taking care of the pet's no longer fun. Oh, I have to feed the pet, and I have to clean the cage, I have to, You want to love the creatures that are in our care, because then it's not a drudgery. It's enjoyable because we know them and we care for them. We appreciate them. The analogy I want to use is Christ and the church. In Ephesians 5, we hear it in every wedding that the husband is head of the wife as Christ is the head of the church. Just another angle on it, Christ is not the steward of the church. Right? Christ does not exercise good stewardship over the church. Why? He owns it. He bought it with his blood. He owns the church, but it's not exploitive, it's not oppressive. Good dominion, good godly dominion causes it to flourish, causes it to thrive, and that's why husbands love their wives. If they do it right, the wife will become more beautiful. She will thrive. She will flourish. She will become more fruitful. And you've seen that even as we grow old and baggy. You've seen wives that have been well-loved for 40, 50 years of marriage. Even though they're getting old, they're radiant. They're radiant. In the same way, I think we should exercise dominion over the creation. Our care for it, it should cause it to flourish and thrive, become more fruitful, not just get diminished. And some people have that attitude of, it's just ours, we can exploit it in any way, shape, or form we want, and if we throw it under the bus, that's okay, because we're in charge. You know, the King Kong mentality of their dominion, and that's just wrong. Four, maintain created diversity. This is something that's not always picked up when you're reading about the ark, but it says in Genesis 7, 2 through 3, God commanded Noah to build an ark to keep the various kinds alive throughout the earth. Wow. So if you think about it, this is sort of, it kind of hit me between the eyes, because this is God's view of diversity. This is after the fall. If there's any time to get rid of a few creatures, this is it, that we don't like. It's like, God, why do we have to bring on all of these creatures that are going to be a great nuisance and hindrance? And it's like, this is after the fall, and he's wanting all of this diversity that he had made. So this is the greatest acts of judgment on the history of the world. Everybody is killed except Noah and his family. Eight people. And now he's keeping a representative sample of every kind of creature he's made. So everybody dies except eight people, but I want cotton top tamarins and pygmy marmosets on the ark. This diversity of life, stuff that we don't even think, why? Why do we bring these guys on? They have no use to us. They're not cattle, sheep, or goats. The ark could have been tiny compared to this huge, massive boat. So this is, besides being the biggest act of judgment in the history of the world, it was also the biggest biodiversity conservation act in the history of the world. I thought only environmentalists used that word, biodiversity conservation. God did it, and he did it in a huge, huge way. The Bible teaches us the proper care of beasts. You shall not see your brother's donkey or his ox fallen down by the way and ignore them. You shall help him to lift them up again. Proverbs 12:10, whoever is righteous has regard for the life of his beast. But the mercy of the wicked is cruel. The Israelites, early on, the main economic base for Israelites was shepherding, especially really early. Okay, Jacob had flocks. And in Genesis 33:13, this is when he meets his brother Esau, and he's like worried that Esau's going to take revenge, and finds out that Esau has, seems like he's forgiven Jacob. But he says this in verse. He says, if I drive the animals hard, they'll all die. So he's just like, I'm going to go with the pace of the flocks. It shows that he has this intuitive, organic sense of care. The flock provides for them. It's their form of wealth. And when you have wealth, it's like an investment. You take care of your investments. Okay? The flock, I take care of them. I don't drive them too hard. I make sure that all of the ewes that are having lambs will be able to care for them and not be driven too hard. All of these things are just implicit in the scriptures. Nature declares the glory and wisdom of God. Okay? This is huge, and I could spend way too much time on it, but Psalm 104, 24, wonderful verse. Psalm 104, 24. O Lord, how manifold are your works. In wisdom you have made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. But in Psalm 104, the psalmist is extolling and praising God for his care over the wild creatures, how he waters them, how he provides habitat for them. It's just glorious. He says, the birds of the heaven dwell, they sing among the branches. It says, in them the birds build their nests. The stork has her home in the fir trees. The high mountains are for the wild goats, and the rocks are refuge for the rock badgers. So what we're getting here is the psalmist is saying how glorious are the wild creatures, and that there's certain places for the wild creatures to have their home. Not every square foot of this planet is meant to be arable land. It says the high mountains are for the wild goats. It's theirs. What? God's giving stuff to wild animals? And it says the rocks are for the rock badgers, refuge for the rock badgers. The fir tree, the stork makes her home. Yes, there is room for wild creatures. Yes, we are to subdue the earth, but in that subduing, I think that it's clear in Scripture that not everything is meant to be in pens or paddocks or petting zoos. Okay? In our dominion, we should have wild land, I think. But that's QA type stuff. Also, Solomon in 1 Kings 4:33, he described plant life from the cedar of Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the walls. He also taught about animals and birds, reptiles and fish. Men of all nations came to listen to Solomon's wisdom. So biology, Solomon was a biology professor. He taught about all of these things. And I don't think it was just Aesop's fables types of things. Like, I mean, yes, you could learn industry from an ant. He said, go to the ant sluggard. But I don't think he was just teaching moral principles through life. He was teaching about life. And that was part of his wisdom. Now I want to segue from the scriptural things that are clear in Scripture of wise dominion to reasons for wise dominion discovered through science. Plants produce oxygen. That's something we've figured out through our chemistry, that not only do they provide food for all of life, it's like food for us. You say, but I'm not a vegetarian, I'm a carnivore. Yeah, but guess what your meat ate? Your cow that you ate in a nice burger ate the plants. So not only do plants provide food for everything, all the way up the food chain, but they produce oxygen. So they feed us and they sustain us through oxygen that they produce. The natural recycling of organic matter and nutrients. There's a whole army of microbes in the soil that we don't even know exist. Well, ecologists know, but there's a whole army of microbes that you might know composting is great, but there's like myriads of microbes in there that keep nutrients cycling. If it wasn't for those bacteria in the soil, nitrogen-fixing bacteria, nitrifying bacteria, denitrifying bacteria, and all these things, life would cease. God knew what he was doing when he made these bacteria that keep things cycling. And if we didn't have them, we couldn't survive, except for miracle. God uses means, and he makes it all worked into the fabric of creation to keep us alive. High diversity is best compared to low diversity. It's more beautiful and pleasing. We know that from just landscaping. If everything was just grass here, it'd be nice, but we got ferns and trees and moss and all of these things here. It makes it prettier. You're landscaping your own home. You don't just have grass. You have trees and shrubs and flowers and all of this stuff. Diversity is just more pleasing aesthetically. It helps ecosystems recover faster after a catastrophe, a fire or a hurricane or a volcano. Ecosystems bounce back. They're resilient because of diversity. The more diversity, the faster they come back. The less diversity, the slower they come back. It's also a smorgasbord for man's scientific or nature-loving pursuits. He made us with a huge variety of interests. I like reptiles and amphibians and insects, and other people like other creatures. I like it all, but there are certain things I really, really like. He's given us this huge array of creatures that can pique our interest depending on our inclinations. It's a smorgasbord. We get to choose. Would-be biologists get to choose what they want to study. Biomonitoring is a thing ecologists talk about of using insect or invertebrate communities in streams and lakes to figure out the health of a stream. So by sampling a stream, pulling up the insects at the bottom of the stream, they can tell if the stream is healthy or sick. They can tell if it's polluted or not polluted based on what insects are down there. Okay, so that's a picture of a stonefly there in my hand, and or somebody's hand. And the stonefly is a great indicator for clean water. It's like if you don't have stoneflies, it's polluted. Stoneflies, it's healthy and clean. Outdoor recreation, of course, is huge. I mean, you can't even put a price tag on that without underestimating it, because it includes hunting, fishing, camping, outdoor recreation, education, ecotourism. It's just huge globally in the billions of dollars. Also, biomimicry is very important in engineering. Biomimicry is design and production of materials, structures, and systems that are modeled on biological design. What's really neat about this, there's hundreds of examples, but one textbook example is cockleburrs, which were the inspiration for Velcro. Somebody looked at a cockleburr under the microscope and they went, light bulb, Velcro, and they just made an artificial cockleburr and invented that. And that's huge. What's really generous with God, God is so generous with us that he didn't patent it. He did not copyright it. It's free for the taking. So engineers can just go out and just copy nature and no copyright violation at all. It's wonderful. So that's just few. I'm just kind of skimming the surface, but now I just want to look briefly at a laundry list of environmental problems. Usually environmentalists exaggerate them, but here it is. Habitat destruction, wanton slaughter. Some of these were more bad in the past. That's like bison. We're almost shoved that to extinction. The sea otter almost to extinction. Overharvest of plants. Ooh, we can make a buck here. Let's harvest ginseng and wild plants, and then pretty soon they're gone or almost gone. water pollution, air pollution, waste management, hazardous, all of these things are, we are not Gnostics. We live in a real world with real things, and we realize that our actions can affect this. But I'm not going to address each. You could write a book on each one of these. I want to just cut through the chase and say, what is the root problem of all of these? All of these. What is the root problem? From a Christian perspective, the environmentalist just looks at secondary causes. The environmentalist looks at secondary causes. I want to look at the fundamental problem. The foundational problem for every environmental problem is sin. Okay? You might say that's oversimplification, but I don't think it is. If it wasn't for sin in the world, there wouldn't be any environmental problems. There might be some challenges that we have to figure out, but there wouldn't be problems. Sin often results in environmental problems, both directly and indirectly. I form light and create darkness. I make well-being and create calamity. I am the Lord who does all these things. Isaiah 45:7. If you look at the Old Testament, you'll see, and just reading the Old Testament over and over again, you see that there's a handful of things that God uses to judge Israel. But he puts it in a very nice, concise way in Ezekiel 14:21. He said, "These are my four disastrous acts of judgment," in case you haven't figured them out by now. Sword, famine, wild beasts, and pestilence. And sometimes you'll see three of the four, sometimes you'll see all four, sometimes they'll break it into others. But those are the main ones. And of the four, three of them are environmental problems. God knows where to hit us. He hits us where it hurts. Our life support system. We get too big for our britches, we cast God behind our back, and he can pull the plug, but he pulls the plug either by having a political, the sword, Assyria, Babylon comes in and wipes, you know, he has a nation come in and destroy, or he has these environmental things destroy. This kind of sets it in high relief in Hosea 4:1-3. "Hear the word of the Lord, you Israelites, because the Lord has a charge to bring against you who live in the land. There is no faithfulness, no love, no acknowledgement of God in the land. There is only cursing, lying, murder, stealing, and adultery. They break all bounds, and bloodshed follows bloodshed." So what I have in red is all of the sins that Israelites were committing, that Hosea was saying, this is what the Lord has against you. Lying, murder, cursing, stealing, adultery, bloodshed, no love, no acknowledgement of God in the land. Because of this, the land mourns. All who live in it waste away. The beasts of the field, the birds of the air, the fish of the sea are dying. We have environmental collapse. So to a secularist, this is nonsense. A secularist would say, what? Beasts of the field, birds of the air, fish of the sea are dying? Because of our carbon footprint. Because of plastics in the ocean. Now, some of these might relate to sin, but they're always looking at how can we coerce people to do our bidding politically, and they're not getting at the root of the problem. What is the connection between, I said earlier, go back one slide, please. Said both directly and indirectly. Directly is pretty easy to see. Greed. Greed results in overharvest of bison. So I can get a lot of money from the hides or sea otter pelts. There's greed there and no regard for the future. So that's directly, but indirectly would be going to the Hosea passage. Next. There we go. What does adultery have to do with bird decline? Well, a secularist would say nothing. What does abortion have to do with the fish of the sea dying? A secularist would say nothing, because there's no connection in their head, because they factored God out of the equation. But God, when he is angry at a nation for their sins, he can pull the plug on these things. And we're scrambling, going, what is it that we're doing, you know, our carbon footprint? And then we get our hair on fire about that. So if sin is the foundational problem, the gospel is the solution, because it's the solution to sin. Francis Schaeffer said, we are reconciled to God when we respond to the gospel. We are reconciled to God. We begin to love God, our neighbor, and the creation. As a result, we begin to practice godly dominion of our own free will rather than having it forced on us by the state. The gospel begins to heal many broken relationships. This is something I got from Francis Schaeffer in his book, Pollution and the Death of Man. Sin causes dislocations and separations between God and man, man and man, man and nature, nature and nature. Okay? So those two double lines represent our separation. We are not reconciled to God. The gospel solves that. And so, the next slide, the gospel pulls them together, breaks down those dividing walls, and begins to heal those broken relationships, primarily between God and man. That's the one we think of with the gospel, but it also begins to heal the others. So, how should we now live? Well, we should live out the gospel in word and deed in every aspect of our life. And I think that's the most powerful way to deal with things. Yes, we can deal with things directly, but usually we think politically when we're thinking, how do we fix the environment? We're thinking, what's the environmental law or regulation and stuff like that. And I think we should do grassroots, gospel, 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 gospel. And then in a generational sense, it will trickle out. But I think rather than telling you be an activist or all of that, I think those are so impotent compared to the gospel. And never mind. That was more for called conference. But what I want to just mention is, how should we now live? Outdoor activities, nature hobbies, visit zoos, botanical gardens, arboretums, parks. Really just kind of begin to saturate your, not because it's a got to, but it's a get to. You don't force it on anyone. You just, and also when you experience things like that, you can always tie it, especially with your family. This is not just something the state did for us that's, you go to a national park and we think, oh, that was nice of the government to do this for us. Well, remember, ultimately, the beauty of creation is God's gift to us, not the state's. The state kind of controls it, and we might be thankful that it's a national park, but ultimately, it's God. So always connect these things with that God is the author of all of it. Join nature societies. Probably not, because they're mostly liberal. So start your own, okay? And watch nature documentaries. Hint, hint. So, questions. Next slide. You got, sorry, only 4 minutes. Yes?
Do you think it is right for the government to own the land for national parks? Or how can we better conserve?
Well, yeah, that's the hard thing. We can't just storm the castle and say, give us the park. But I think ultimate, and this is where it has to be grassroots, and as my brother says, the state is not our savior, but it needs to be saved, okay? It needs the gospel. As the gospel pervades in every level of society, then things will start being corrected. So I think ultimately, if we became a more Christian society and the government became more and more Christian, they would say, okay, we need to privatize the parks. We need to say, okay, find a good organization with a good mission statement that's God-honoring and say, we're going to now have Yellowstone be a trust and we are going to give it to a private, you know, hopefully somebody that's a Christian organization that says we're going to keep, it's a trust, so we have to keep it as a park. But then we can beautify it, use our user fees to beautify it, and not send all the user fees back to Washington, D.C. to support bureaucrats, but to pour all that money back into the park, to beautify it, to manage it, and stuff like that. So I'm thinking, this is just crazy thinking, but we need to think crazy. What would a society look like that was saturated with the gospel at the individual level, at the state level, at the federal level? So these are just thoughts. Another question or two? Yes.
Did Noah bring insects like mosquitoes on the ark?
Well, that's another huge question. Yeah, did mosquitoes come on the ark? Yes. All of these creatures that we think are pests went on the ark. This was after the fall. Many of our pest species are due to our bad dominion. Pests aren't just innately pests. Think cockroaches. They have a role in the environment. The reason they are pests is because we offer them free room and board. And I think good dominion, I don't mind killing something that's invading my home because that's my habitat, not theirs. I want to make sure that they just learn how to do their own habitat, not my habitat. So good dominion results in pest species going down, and they start to fill their role in the environment. I don't have a problem with making sure malaria is controlled, but mosquitoes have a role. Yes, they're fallen because the females suck blood. I have a talk on that. It's called The Origins of Natural Evil. That I gave it called, but they have a role in fish food. Mosquitoes provide a huge amount of fish food and dragonfly food. So in God's economy, all of these things that are a nuisance to us have roles. It's just we have to make sure that we're managing them properly. I wrote an article for Answers Magazine called Carrying Past Prejudice, and it's just talking about pests in a layperson. So that's a quick answer. Let me know if... One more question? Yeah. Yeah. I would say that no, we have the as dominion. We are man's dominion includes captive animals. I think that enhances our appreciation for natural animals, but I don't think everything should be. So when you don't have the Bible framing up your boundaries, then and you just let secularists think, then they elevate animals to our level and say animals have just as much right as we do. Or they devalue humanity down to the animal level. Either way, they're making it level. So that's why you got things like PETA and stuff like that, where animal rights activists that are like, you can't imprison an animal. And it's just like a secular worldview gone overspill.
So you see some of the, like, sometimes you go and you see, like, oh, this is really well maintained, a nice enclosure or something. Otherwise, you see anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's where we say a righteous man has regard for the life of his beast. So if it is captive, it should be not languishing in utter hell on earth. So kids, take care of your pets. Don't let them sit in squalor. You know, clean your pets. Make sure that they... So whether it's a zoo and you have big pets, the zoo people, and they're learning to take better and better care of things. But it's something that we have the right to do. But I have to end with a joke. You reminded me, Free. There were two marine biologists who were arguing. They were Christian marine biologists arguing about soteriology. And one was arguing for God's eternal porpoise. And the other was arguing for Free Willy. So, anyway. Oh, yes. This one? Switch.
Well, thank you, Gordon. This has been great. I think a lot of my thoughts about the environmental world are a little bit clouded by the political environment, so I appreciate this talk. This has been great. I want to give an update on schedule. There's a number of things that could happen this morning. So we have field games. Did we end up with the volleyball set up? We did? Okay. So volleyball, frisbee, spike ball, human foosball. There's a BB gun shooting range, I think, on that side of the park. Is it that direction? Okay, I'm inside. I don't know. Where do we end up with giant swing? Do we have a plan for how to make signups happen?
Yeah, it's not everybody. All the kids that wanted to do it.
Okay, so that's been figured out. Okay, so if you know, you know, I guess. Lunch is at 12:30. Go ahead. The giant swing is over in this neighborhood somewhere. I think I saw it. Okay. Yeah. If you walk around over there, look up, you'll see there's cabling up in the trees. Good question. So lunch is 12:30. I'm really bad at Excel. Is what this means. Yep, I think that's true. The other stuff is not time constrained, like mini golf. All those things are always open. So, waterfront is in the afternoon. Is it really? Well, that may be an error. See, also, I'm bad at Excel. It could be open. I genuinely don't remember. I'd have to go look at the schedule that the camp side of the schedule. So I can go check on that. All right. You're dismissed.
Thanks.